What's up, freaks? This is your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of TFTC. This rip was brought to you by our good friends at River. River is a company that's doing it the right way. They build their own infrastructure. They build their own wallets. They're getting their own MTLs. And they've got customer support. You can call River if you have a question. Okay? And they've got a new onboarding plan. So if you go to river.com/TFTC, you sign up, buy $100 worth of Bitcoin, you're going to get $5 worth of Bitcoin. river.com/TFTC. If you want to DCA into Bitcoin, there's no fees when you DCA on River. Other exchanges have high fees, high spreads. You don't have that with River. Save some money by dollar cost averaging with River. Again, they have a customer support line. If you ever have a question, you want to call them, they will answer the phone. My neighbor called them the other week. They answered. They answered his question. They made him feel more comfortable. Good customer service. It's hard to find these days. Not with River. Go to river.com/TFTC. Set up your account today. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends down the hall, Unchained. They're doing things the right way as well, leveraging Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties to bring you the financial platform of the future, a financial platform under a Bitcoin standard. And they have their vaults, which is a 2 or 3 multi-sig wallet where you hold 2 keys, Unchained holds 1. You always have control of your Bitcoin since you have the 2 keys. Unchained's there to collaboratively sign with you if you need them to be the second in the 2 or 3 multi-sig. They also have their lending desk, which is built on this 2 or 3 multi-sig primitive. And you put Bitcoin up as collateral in a 2 or 3 multi-sig escrow. You hold 1 key. You don't control the Bitcoin, but you have visibility into the wallet so that you know your Bitcoin is not being rehypothecated. They also have their IRA product, which allows you to hold 2 keys in a 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum, Unchained being the other key. And you can actually transition your IRA into Bitcoin, hold your own keys. It's a beautiful thing. They've streamlined that process, made it a lot easier within the last month. They've got a lot of things on the roadmap. They're about to go gangbusters on the product rollouts, from what I understand. So stay tuned for that. You can also buy Bitcoin on Unchained. Via their trading desk, you buy Bitcoin, go straight to your 2 or 3 multi-sig vault. So they're doing it the right way. They're really innovating. I think they're one of the best companies in the space. If you are interested in any of these products, go to unchained.com/consultation. Set up a consultation. Tell them that TFTC sent you. Just learn about it. You don't have to ape into their products, but I think you should learn about them. So set up a consultation. They have a concierge onboarding team that'll walk you through everything they're working on. Unchained.com/consultation. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Bitcoin Talent Co. It is a recruiting firm built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. So if you're a company in the space looking to hire the best talent, go to Bitcoin Talent Co. and get set up with them. They understand Bitcoin at the protocol level. They understand Lightning. They understand mining. They have the ability to find what you need. And they come from a very strong background in recruiting. Andy led the recruiting team at Uber, taking them from, I believe, 100 to 10,000 employees. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to do this. He knows how to understand your processes. They also just launched their Flex program. So if you don't need full-time employees, if you're being hypercognizant of your burn rate and how you're allocating capital in these tough economic times, their Flex product allows you to tap into a network of workers who can work on contract and can do quick sprints for you, whether it's design, development, marketing, anything that you may need. So go to bitcointalent.co, tell them that TFTC sent you. If you're a company looking to hire full-time employees, if you're looking for some contract work, get set up with them. And then alternatively, if you're talent out there looking to get into the Bitcoin industry, hit them up, get your profile out there, and get your name in the mix to come join the industry building out the Bitcoin standard. Enjoy this rip.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
There's blockchain and shitcoinery in Ireland.
There's blockchain and shitcoinery in Ireland. Yeah, for sure. That was one of the things that when I, because like I'd been here obviously for like over a year, and then I had to leave because I had to apply for my work visa, but I had to do it from outside the country. So I had to go back to Ireland to do that. So like I was going home for a few months, and I figured, all right, I'll like, there's got to be some like Bitcoin meetups. And I Googled it, and it was just like blockchain and crypto meetups like all day long. I was like, fuck, there's nothing here at all. So
are they well attended meetups, or are they just?
I have no idea. I mean, I didn't go to one, but like it was just like when you Google it, it's just like there's tons of them, like there's dozens of them, just like every week there was just like so many. And I was like, there's got to be some Bitcoin stuff, but nothing was coming up on Google. And I was kind of getting disillusioned. But then in January of this year, some random like Twitter account just formed. It was like Dublin Bitcoiner. And he's just like, oh, I'm sick of the fact that there's no Bitcoin meetups in Ireland, so I'm going to start one. And I was like, oh, yeah, nice one. Okay, like, this is great. So I immediately, like, DM'd him. And I was like, all right, Zaprite's going to sponsor it. Like, let's get this going. I'm going to, like, send me an invoice. Log into Zaprite, send me an invoice, and I'll send you, like, some Bitcoin, and we'll get it going, like, a few hundred euro. Like, let's get you off the ground. We can give some sats out and, like, help people. And the guy said he was, like, sitting beside his wife on his phone, and he's like, I think some guy's trying to scam me. He's like, he's telling me he's going to send me some Bitcoin, and like, I don't know what's going on here.
Did you open it with, hey, sir, how's your trade going?
Hey, sir, how's your trade? I'll send you some Bitcoin. But yeah, no, that was Gary, and he's like, he's been doing an absolutely like phenomenal job. He's basically, not only is he running the meetups, but he's like actively orange pilling a bunch of businesses, getting them on board. There's like, you know, a particular restaurant as well that we've got on board that we go to regularly for meals and stuff where you can pay in Bitcoin. He's got just local businesses and services and like carpenters and plumbers and painters and everybody just like starting to accept it. But the meetups are amazing. Like it's a lot of fun. He's got these like really cool games he comes up with at the start of the meetup that are like tied to like Bitcoin somehow. So one of them was like, you know, we had some swag to give out, so we basically just had everybody go around the room and like in a circle and guess a number between 1 and 50, and whoever guessed it like obviously got the swag. And that was to kind of like, you know, imitate mining and stuff like that in a basic way. But it started from there, and then it just like, you just got more creative and more creative with the games and the stuff at the start. So like, it's really cool, but it's great because like you get between 20 and 30 people once a month to the meetups, like which is great for, and it's not in Dublin City, it's kind of like a little bit outside Dublin City in his kind of like local area. So to get that from the start, like has been really good, but it's good to see for sure.
Are people grokking it in Ireland? Obviously Gary and people attending the meetups, but Bitcoin is big as a theme as it becomes.
I think definitely more and more for sure. And there's now there's a bunch of Bitcoin companies that are starting up in Ireland as well. Like, especially you got like Skilling Mining and those guys and stuff doing like really great stuff on the mining side. You've got, there's another startup I met a crew a couple of weeks ago from Sulu, which is basically using the Lightning Network to monetize like APIs for businesses and stuff like that. So there's definitely businesses that are like Bitcoin specific and they're doing it, but from the public perception, it's still a bit, you know, it's still all the mainstream like media foot on like, you know, boiling the oceans and all that like kind of stuff. But it's definitely, people are like, they're warming to it more and more, put it that way. It's definitely, there's a new kind of like, I don't know if lobby group is the right word, but like Bitcoin Network Ireland. And they're basically set up to kind of be, I don't want to say the spokespeople for Bitcoin because that sounds like kind of like cringe, but like basically they want to be there whenever there's any like government policies or anything that are like being discussed or talked about. They want to be there as like the voice of reason, being like, well, actually no, like here's the benefits of Bitcoin and stuff, because, you know, otherwise who's going to do that? And we are like, Ireland in general is just like completely going like way, way, way left. They're just like complete like WEF country. And it's like, that's one of the things I've noticed since being back is, it's absolutely nuts like what direction that country is going in, and I don't like it at all. And it kind of scares me because like I'm kind of in that mode of like, all right, do I settle down in Ireland again? I haven't lived there for 14 years, or do I like come back and live in Austin now that I have my work visa and stuff like that? So I'm trying to make that decision, and at the same time, like, just like seeing what's happening in Ireland is like kind of scares me like quite a lot. Yeah.
Is it happening in spite of what many Irishmen want to happen, or are people bought in on it?
No, I don't think they're bought in on it. I think they just kind of, they're lazy and they don't really care. It's just like apathy. But there's, you know, for example, there's like hate speech laws coming into Ireland, where, you know, if you've got what the government considers to be hate speech, like let's say you got a meme on your phone or something, you've got to be able to prove that like you weren't going to send that on to somebody else, and all you can be done for hate speech and all this kind of stuff. And the government did like a little kind of, I don't know what you call it, but they basically just did a pre-polling of the population to see like if this is what they wanted. And like 74% of Irish people said like, absolutely no way, this is ridiculous, we don't want hate speech laws. And the government basically just said like, oh, well, like we don't, we just do that to like keep you guys happy, but we're going to push it through anyway. Like, so I don't think Irish people want it. It's just, yeah, it's just a lot of people are just, they don't, there's a lot of trust in the government still. And they just kind of like, they just kind of let themselves get like walked over. Like there's a lot of issues with like immigration and everything now as well. Like Ireland is just being taken over, and most people, like there's rallies, there's people giving out, there's protests and stuff. But for the most part, people are just kind of, they're too busy just getting on with their lives. Like they don't care.
But hate speech laws in Ireland, I mean, I'm of Irish descent.
Yeah.
Third generation American, yeah. But my ancestors on both sides came from Ireland, and very sarcastic bunch.
Yeah, it's like this is the crazy thing. Like it's the Irish humor is you know, it's hard to get used to it at the best of times. And now you're telling people that like they gotta be politically correct in everything they say, which, you know, I mean, obviously times have to change and there's some things you can't say anymore, but like that's just more people being decent people, being like, okay, well, like I wanna be a good person, so I'm not gonna insult somebody. But like having it brought into law is a completely different story. Being told, like, compelled speech, what you can and cannot say, is just horrific by any standard.
Like, if I bring my Irish limerick book to Ireland and distribute to somebody, am I distributing hate speech?
Probably, yeah, absolutely.
That's the big gift in our family. Our grandmother started that tradition.
Oh, yeah?
When we graduate high school, she gives us
nice
a book of Irish limericks. Going back to, like, 1400.
Yeah.
And some of those limericks are pretty raunchy.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I can
politically
imagine.
Yeah. Incorrect.
Yeah. 100%. I can imagine there's probably stuff in there that you just can't like read out loud anymore.
Oh, that's the best part. Everybody gets a little wine drunk and pull out the limerick book around the table. And open up a random page and read a limerick.
Yeah. That's it's great. It's great. But yeah, there's probably a lot of stuff that in there that would be like censored and banned right now. It's like, you can't say that stuff anymore. But yeah, it's like there's a, you know, it's not unique to Ireland. There's a lot of places that are heading in that direction, but it's just when you've been away from the country for so long and you go back and you see it changing like that, it's like anything. It's like the frog in the boiling water, right? Like most people just kind of don't see it. They're like, oh, it's just a little thing. It's just hate speech. We got to stop people from saying bad things. They're not going to prosecute us. We're going to be okay. And, you know, I don't have anything to hide. So, you know, that old like chestnut. But when you step into it after being away for 14 years, you kind of see the radical change, right? Like, especially for Ireland, which is like, you know, we basically like fought the British and we kicked them out because we were like, hell no, you're not like taking over us. Like it's just like Easter Rising and 1916 and all this stuff. It was just like, we didn't put up with any of this stuff. And we're a very conservative Catholic country. Now, I know the Catholic Church has had like a lot of crazy shit going on in Ireland, so that's a whole other story. But we've come from this traditional background, and now to see people just be like walked over and like run by the WEF and they don't even care, and all these like liberal ideas coming in, and everyone's just like, yeah, well, we have to be more tolerant, so that's okay. Like, let's just let it happen. It's crazy to see it. It's like a complete U-turn. Like, you could understand if a country was maybe already left-leaning and they just kind of got more left, like Canada, for example. Like Canada just seems like they've always been that way, and now they're just getting like worse and worse. And but Ireland hasn't really had that like attitude, and now it's very prevalent.
Yeah, and bringing back to kicking out the British, I mean, this is essentially copying the British hate speech law, implementing it into your own country.
Yeah, it's like, it's just crazy. It just feels like, I mean, Ireland has always been that way, in fairness. Like, ever since, even when I was growing up, like, we always just copied a lot of things, particularly that the British did. Like, whenever stuff came in there, like, we would copy it. And, like, if ever, like, you know, bills or laws were passed, it would be like, oh, yeah, well, that seems good. We'll do that, too. So it was very much like, you know, they're our closest neighbor. We'll follow what they do. So it's a lot of that continuing. But it just seems to be taken to a whole other level now, where the government, they're just brazen. They just don't even care anymore. Like I said, like, you know, doing a poll of the people, it's like 74%, like, absolutely no, we don't want hate speech. Like, yeah, we're going to do it anyway. Like, that's just like, you know, do you even have democracy anymore? It's like, it's just like, nobody cares. Like,
no. Or maybe you do have democracy. It's just played its out to its end state. And this is what the end state of democracy is at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, definitely, like, I mean, I always, like, I try to make that argument to, like, friends and family as well. It's like, look, the higher you go up in the levels, you're ceding your power to a higher and higher authority that is so far removed. And with countries and nation states, you got to that natural conclusion of, like, king or prime minister or, like, whatever it might have been, or president, like, and that seemed to be, like, the stop. And even that was bad enough, because these people in Washington or in Dublin or in London, like, they're so far removed from everyday life. But now it's like we've ceded the power one step higher. And now it's like the WHO and the WEF and, like, the IMF and, like, FATF and all these people like that, completely unelected. And so now I've been making the argument for years now that there hasn't been a functioning democracy anywhere in the world for decades, when you really think about it. But a lot of people are like, oh, you're crazy. We can still go out and vote. And, like, you know, we fought for our right to vote and we got to vote and all this stuff. And it's like, well, what are you voting for? Like, you're voting for people. You're voting for the person that you want to take orders from the WEF. That's what you're voting for.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, I want this person in because, you know, they'll be nice when they're being ordered to do what they're told to do. And it's like, all right. Well, like, I mean, if that's how you think, then, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Here's the scissors. You can cut your balls off right now. Just do it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, I don't know. It's, it can be, yeah, I mean, it can obviously be depressing if you let yourself, like, get, like, sucked into it too much. But, you know, as Bitcoiners, like, we have this, like, bright orange future that we're, like, very hopeful, and we have this low time preference. But, well, we can see what's coming, so we're going to make our lives better and we're going to go towards that instead. But trying to instill that in other people, in friends and family and stuff, it's hard. It's very hard.
Like you said, people are going along with their own lives. They've got their own problems that they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. The economic situation globally is not good, to put it plainly, for many people. People are under a lot of economic stress, which leads to a lot of interpersonal stress in their own lives, and whole idea of having to think about dealing with the political structure and trying to fight back against that just becomes too daunting. It's like, hey, I got a fucking bill to pay. Let me figure this out first.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. That's it. It's like people's lives are just getting harder and harder. They're getting busier and busier, and they just have less time to think about this stuff. And they just feel like, oh, well, if I just work a little bit harder and I get a little bit more money in, and then I can be comfortable and I don't have to have these money issues or whatever, but completely not realizing that, like, it's never going to end. Never going to end, because I think it was Jack Mahler's that said, like, most people are operating their life at a loss. Like, and that's just going to continue, because no matter how hard you work, if you're in the system, you're never, ever going to outpace it.
Yeah. You're working hard for soft money.
You're working hard for soft money. That's exactly it. Yeah.
What's the economic situation like in Ireland right now? Is inflation as bad as it is? And
I think official numbers, right, got up to like 8-10%, whatever it was, like, in most places, like, similar. Obviously, you know, the real inflation's a lot higher than that, because energy prices were through the roof. You know, I think I probably saw you tweeting about that at some stage, like, months ago as well. You've probably seen it, the people posting their, like, photos on Twitter and stuff of their energy bills in Ireland, like, you know, 10 grand a month and stuff for bids, just, like, absolutely nuts. So, you know, people have been noticing it, but there's a general consensus in Ireland that Ireland is doing really, really well, because we have these supposed really good GDP numbers, but it's all kind of fake. Because it's the foreign corporations that are generating this GDP, but none of it is actually
staying in the country
or benefiting the country in any way. It's like, and there's been a plenty of economists, even like Keynesian economists, like, who have written about this, because they recognize it. They're like, yeah, this is fake GDP. This is not real. Like, Ireland is not doing as well as people say it is, but apparently we're the poster child for, like, you know, oh, we went through this really horrible recession, because Ireland got, like, hit really hard in, like, 2008, 2009. But we seem to bounce back really quickly, and now we have one of the strongest growing economies again, apparently. But again, it's all just, you know, fake GDP numbers. But it's obviously not sustainable. And now, of course, we've got like massive immigration as well, not just like Ukraine, but like many, many nations, like African nations, everything, like they're all coming in. And we, as an EU country, we have to, I think by law, accept like immigration. So we can't do anything about it. And there's a massive, massive housing crisis in Dublin. Like people cannot, like young people cannot even find a house. And if even if they could, they couldn't afford it. Like there's nothing on the market either to rent or buy. Even if there was, you can't afford it. Rents, like house prices are just absolutely nuts. There's more and more homeless people every single day. And yet we're just taking in absolute record numbers in immigration, which is like, I mean, now that I'm saying it, it just seems so absurd that like the government would be taking in all these people and we can't even take care of our own. But that's what's happening. And then, of course, most people are cheering it on, right? They're just like waving the Ukraine flags going, yay, we have to do this because we have to, like, you know, we have to take these people in because they're like fleeing from a war. And it's like, well, you know, how come they get through like six countries to come to Ireland? Like they're not fleeing a war. Like, you know what I mean? Like the most of Ukraine is like still going out to restaurants and pubs and nightclubs. And even if you're fleeing from the bad war part, which is, yeah, it's terrible. You're not fleeing to get into Ireland. They're just coming because one, we have one of the most welcoming countries and we give them like, you know, crap ton of social welfare and free houses. We're building free modular homes for all the people that come in now as well. So like, why wouldn't we come? But we, like I said, we have to by law take a certain amount as well. So it just seems like we're heading in a very bad direction. But again, not specific to Ireland. Like it seems to be, you know, every country. But one of the stats actually that came out recently was Ireland is the most expensive European country to live in, with prices on average 46% higher than the EU average.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So think about that. Like that's like 46% above the EU average. And yet we have all of these immigrants coming into the country who are somehow able to be fed and sheltered in the most expensive EU country. Like how does that make sense? Like it doesn't obviously, but
it does not compute.
That's where we are.
And then when you bring it back to like the GDP numbers, which I imagine are predominantly being driven by the Apples of the world.
Yeah.
Like they're domiciled in Ireland because of the tax benefits, which are there because taxes are low. So taxes are low. They're not going back to subsidize this influx of immigration and the welfare that comes with it. So that doesn't seem like,
nothing really
computes here.
Nothing does. And it's just so bad on so many levels, because I talked to somebody who's close to the like the rental markets, and they're saying that like the likes of Google and Twitter and all these companies that are headquartered in Dublin, they're like, there might be an apartment that comes up and it's like €3,000 a month to rent this apartment in Dublin city center. And you've got a lineup of like, you know, 100 people outside waiting to like view it and try and like get lucky and rent it. And then you've got like Google that just comes in and says like, yeah, we'll give you $4,000 a month for that apartment. But just, you know, let the people line up and you know, make them pretend that they have a shot. And so like none of these apartments are ever getting to market because of these big multinationals are just paying way over the odds to like sweep them up.
Are they sweeping up to put their employees there or just to?
Yeah. Now that was happening up until, I know they've put like a freeze on employees. I know like in Google and Twitter and stuff, they've laid off a bunch of staff in Dublin as well over the last kind of 6 to 12 months. So like that may not be happening in fairness as much now, but it's what has contributed to the situation that we're in now, is that there was just literally like nothing. Like if you go on one of the biggest housing rental sites in Ireland, you know, there's a handful of like apartments and houses for rent. Like it's crazy. Like that there's just nothing available. Like the supply is just gone. But at the same time, we're bringing all these immigrants in and building the modular homes when our own like 20-year-olds like coming out of college and stuff like can't afford anywhere to rent or live, or families, like young families trying to buy a house. It's backwards. Like if you were to explain it to somebody, they would be like, what the hell is going on? Like
better be careful, John. You're bordering on some racist hate speech here.
Yes, absolutely. I'm talking ill will of the government, so that's got to be hate speech. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Who are you to want your fellow countrymen to be able to go and rent a house after college?
Yeah, absolutely. That's an absolute right wing. That's a right wing thought, that I want Irish people to be able to afford a nice, comfortable house and be prosperous. And that's a very right wing of me. I apologize. I hope I haven't offended any of your listeners.
No, this is great. I mean, I saw a TikTok video going around a few months ago on Twitter, funnily enough, but I believe it was Galway or Dublin. It was one of those like men on the street interviews and asking the question, what was the most popular name?
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
In
Galway. It was in Galway, yeah.
In Galway last year, and everybody was like, Seamus or Kevin? It was like, no, it was Mohammed.
Yeah,
And people were like shocked.
Yeah. It's like, it's nuts. It feels like the Irish identity has just been wiped out. It feels like, and it's obviously like, you know,
now you're bordering on replacement theory, conspiracy theories,
all that
here.
Stuff. Yeah. I better be careful here, but it's like, you see, like I said, it goes back to like when you haven't been there in 14 years and you just land yourself back in after being away for so long, you can see all this stuff as clear as day. And that's just an observation. Like we don't have to get into like all this, like, you know, what that means or who's behind it or what's happening. But like, it is an absolute fact that, you know, it's kind of, and he can't even talk about this stuff anymore.
Well,
right?
John,
if you try and say like, well, look, they're wiping out like Irish national identity, then it's like, oh, well, are you racist? You don't want these other identities in Ireland? And it's like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying like, we're wiping out our Irish history. Like it's.
Well, why is Irish identity worth even protecting, preserving?
Yeah.
The future.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it's not. Most people just seem like, oh, why do you care about that? Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
why? No, but honestly, let's make the case. Like, why preserve Irish identity and culture?
Well, I mean, Irish people have contributed so much to the world that, like, it just feels like there's a legacy that needs to be remembered. That's like, you know, that's at the core of it. I mean, if you think back of, think back to like what the Irish monks have done in transcribing like a lot of the kind of like books and stuff through history that would have been like lost like through the ages, like in Europe. Like they basically just kind of, you know, there's so much there, even in the cultural aspect of like, you know, the poetry and the music and the writings and everything. And obviously, like, you know, a lot of people have family connection, like, you know, throughout the world, because the Irish have like spread so far across the world that like it feels like we're, you know, I don't want to get into the whole thing of like, oh, Ireland's great, but like it feels like we were a nation that's punched above our weight for so long that we have contributed a lot, and a lot of it comes from our history and our heritage. And so if you destroy that, then maybe you destroy a very strong part of a culture that has contributed so much to the world. And so it's not just a case of like, you know, it's not just a case of like, you know, being proud to be Irish and stuff like that, because I've never really bought into that as much. It's just more like when a nation has a cultural history, it's something that they feel a very, very strong connection to, and it changes you in like, obviously, like a good and powerful way. But if you don't have that, then, you know, you're kind of drifting. Like, you don't have anything that you cling to, then you've got nothing to fight for, and you've got nothing to be, you know, again, well, like I said, the pride aspect of it is not as much, but yeah, it's, maybe I'm waffling too much on that point, but like, it's every nation has things that need to be nurtured and cherished, because it's what made them the nation that they were. And obviously over time that like just gets stronger and stronger, and that community like builds and builds. And if you just like start fracturing that and dismantling that culture and that heritage and introducing, you know, diversity so that you split all that up, it's, you're not doing anybody any good.
No.
When you take it to the extreme level. Obviously, like, you know, bringing people of different cultures and backgrounds into nations is great. Like, it helps everybody learn and experience new things. But when you just completely blow up a culture and decimate it so that the culture doesn't exist anymore, that's obviously not going to be good for anybody. Not for the people coming in, not for the people already there. It's but again, we're getting down a whole other rabbit hole there. But it's not specific to Ireland. It's more specific to, like, every nation needs to, like, retain that culture that made them the nation that they were.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, if you don't, there actually will not be any diversity. And that seems like, I'm trying to figure out, like, the correct word. Is a projection by the WEF class, like, sort of trying to browbeat people for not wanting this to happen and calling them racist. Like, you don't like diversity. It's like, well, actually, it seems like the goal of these policies, whether they're direct or indirect, and these themes that are put forth by World Economic Forum, World Health Organization, Financial Action Task Force, UN, whoever it may be, like, it seems like the end goal is to actually, like you said, destroy individual cultures, which actually leads to true diversity, to create this sort of unitary, uniform culture globally. I mean,
yeah,
again, people will say we're getting into, like, replacement theory, conspiracy theories, or New World Order. But again, like you said, somebody was detached from Ireland for 14 years in return. Like, it's an objective change that you've observed. And
yeah, exactly. And I think it's, I mean, again, like, it's a much bigger conversation to go down that rabbit hole and explain, like, the whys and why nots. But, like, you, maybe part of the point I was making earlier, where it's like, just people have apathy now. They just don't really care. Yeah. Like, the government is making decisions, they're bringing in aids, and most people are just like, yeah, whatever. Like, I don't. Whereas, like, 20 or 30 years ago, Irish people may have reacted way stronger to that, because they would have felt that, like, the Irish way of life was being attacked. Whereas now, the Irish way of life is being decimated, like, daily. So, like, most people are just like, yeah, well, there is nothing to defend anymore. It's like, we're all just, like, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, if you chip away from what people felt strongly about, then, like, in the future, when governments come in to, like, stamp all over the last little bit of heritage you have, like, most people are just going to be, oh, well, it's gone anyway. So, like, there's nothing left worth fighting for.
Yeah. No, I mean, and this is, we talk about Ireland, we talk about where I grew up in Northeast Philly, which was an Irish Catholic part of the city. My parents grew up there, a very strong community in the Northeast. And we began to see, like, things started to change in the 90s. We moved to South Carolina for 4 years and moved back to the Philadelphia area, but we settled in a suburb, not where I grew up, in the Northeast. And very strong, tight-knit community culture for 30 years, or longer than that, way longer than that, decades, many decades post-World War II. And now they don't even say Mass in English anymore, where my parents got married, where they went to school.
Right.
And the neighborhood's completely gone to shit. It's, like, crime-ridden. Like, there's no strong community.
Yeah,
and it's weird. It's,
yeah, crime is one of the big things that, like, is a byproduct of, you know, splintering a society. Because, I mean, you know yourself, you talk about, I keep going back to that episode you had with that guy from the small towns, like
Chuck Burrow, like
2 years ago or something it was. Like, yeah. That was, like, yeah, that was really great, because, like, it explains a lot. Like, when you have a strong community of a lot of people with similar, you know, outlooks on life and similar, like, cultural histories and norms, they want to protect that, right? Not necessarily that, like, they think it's superior than any other culture, but it's like they want to protect it because that's their way of life. That's what they've become used to. And when that gets fragmented and broken apart, it's very hard for people. It, like, one of the things obviously that comes in is a lot of crime and stuff like that as well, because people then really have nothing to protect. There's no kind of sense of, like, well, we need to, like, you know, get rid of this crime because we need to protect that underlying culture. But if the underlying culture has gone, then people are more often likely to just, like, you know, move out of cities or move somewhere or go somewhere else because they just don't care anymore. They're just like, well, you know, what I had there was gone, so I'm just going to, like, move on, which is sad. Right? Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's bad that people have to make those decisions because of what is being, like, forced on them. Yeah. You know, some people might say it's better to be moving out of cities anyway, and I'd probably be one of those people. I don't really like cities, but that's beside the point. The point is, like, that, you know, it's when you pull apart the fabric of what, you know, made a culture strong, then just people kind of lose that attachment to that culture.
Yeah, and as it pertains to, like, mass immigration, whether it be in the EU or here in the United States, it's always something that's never really intuitively made sense to me, is that the meme is like, they're coming to, like, a better place. And it's like, And I think El Salvador is a great example of, like, a country that adopted a Bitcoin standard. Bukele came in, and whether you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, the way he did it, he completely solved the crime problem within a matter of years. They were the murder capital of the world, San Salvador was, for many years. And he came in and really cleaned it up, and crime has fallen precipitously, the economy is doing better. And now you have the situation where if you poll Salvadorans who have left the country over the last two decades, whether or not they would come back, a large percentage of them are saying, yes, like, I plan on moving back to El Salvador. It's finally safe and I want to move back there. And again, bring this back to immigration policy. It's something that really doesn't make sense to me. It's like, oh, we got to save all these people from these terrible countries. And the focus is never on, like, all right, how do we make these countries a place where people don't want to leave in the first place?
Yeah.
Like, incentivize that culture. And U.S. foreign policy and the U.N. foreign policy over the last five decades has just been completely destabilized and pushed people out.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like I feel like society in general has gone down that path of, like, let's not try and fix the underlying problem. Let's just, like, band-aid upon band-aid. And of course we see that in, you know, with central banks and fiat, and as Bitcoiners we know that well, because it just seems to be like, you know, money printing has caused all these issues, and like, oh damn, we have problems, how are we going to fix it? Oh, let's print more money. Like, it's just, you know, it seems like we're just at the stage where it's like, oh well, we know things are completely broken, let's just keep going as long as we can. There's no, like, underlying, like, oh well, let's just go back a little bit, take a couple of steps back and figure out how we can actually fix this. The example you gave, like, let's try and fix these countries so that people don't have to leave. And, you know, that's probably an easier job to do.
It definitely is.
Like, it's
El Salvador, like, did it in 4 years.
That's what I mean. It's like, it just seems like such an easy fix. It's like, all right, well, let's just stop printing money.
Stop printing money. Let's actually put criminals in jail.
Let's actually, like, clean up society. Let's actually do the right thing here. But again, it feels like, I mean, you know, we can talk about California and all these places where it feels like it's just the opposite. It's where, like, oh, well, like, you know, we can't really prosecute people anymore. That's not fair. So let's just let them steal up to $1,000 and then that's okay and we won't prosecute them. It's like, what? Like, when did that ever make sense? It makes sense to a government who is running out of money and can't afford to police. Like, that's what happens. You just end up being, oh, we're not going to police anymore.
Yeah. And that's the particularly scary prospect of what's going on now, where you have everybody flooding into these Western countries as they're going broke. And you're just going to get everybody in there and be like, oh, we broke the money. Like,
we
don't know how to do anything. Good luck.
Yeah.
But we're going to fix it.
We're going to win.
We are going to win.
Yeah. We're going to win.
I mean, coming back to the great orange future in Bitcoin and why we do what we do, it's because it gives us an actionable avenue through which we can build a better future for ourselves. And to do that, we're going to need infrastructure, particularly software infrastructure. Obviously there's physical infrastructure on the mining and full node side, but the ability for people to access Bitcoin, to receive Bitcoin, to send Bitcoin in ways that are at parity with the incumbent financial system is important.
Yeah,
and that's what
you're
building at Zaprite.
Yeah. I see where you're going there with this. I mean, we don't have to go too deep into the backstory because, like, I think I probably, you know, talked about this last time I was on, and most people hopefully kind of know the backstory. But Zaprite obviously started because I needed a way to accept Bitcoin. And that was really kind of at the heart of what has been driving Zaprite from the very start, is like, you need to make it very, very easy for people to accept Bitcoin. And obviously, you know, with, I mean, we can talk about, you know, Parker and Will joining as well, but like, just to mention that the recent essay that Parker wrote about the pay me in Bitcoin theory, it's the same kind of thing. Like, it's all about merchant adoption. It's, you know, we can't pay in Bitcoin unless the merchant is accepting. Like, that's just obvious, right? And so that's one of the things we really need to do, is like, we really need to have these tools in place that make it very easy for people to accept Bitcoin. And I probably talked about this last time I was on, but like, there's major things that have stopped people doing that in the past, which is like, you know, volatility and the price of Bitcoin and tax affairs and accounting and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, again, it just goes back to what we were doing. Like, we just recognize the underlying problem and fix it. And the underlying problem is, okay, if we don't have these tools, then let's just build them. And that's the way it is. And there's an amazing amount of things being built on Bitcoin right now. I mean, the, like, this bear market, I mean, I know it's like cliche to say it, but like, the amount of work that's being done, that I see being done in the Bitcoin space, is like absolutely phenomenal. Like, I think, you know, once, you know, another cycle or two, like, and we're just going to have like so many different services out there that are just going to become like second nature to people. They're just going to do things that, you know, were a problem before and are not a problem now. And it's great to see. And of course, obviously, like, that's the payment side of it, is what we're trying to do at Zaprite. It's just make it easier for people to accept Bitcoin and understand how their business is performing on a Bitcoin standard, and then bring in tools that allow them to either spend that Bitcoin or, you know, convert it if they need to pay bills or whatever it might be. But really, it's all about like building that application there and making it easier for people to use Bitcoin.
Yeah. And going back to Parker's piece and the whole idea of merchant adoption, Dan Held would not be happy with this part of the conversation, but yeah. It is important. And I do think Parker's piece was very, I think it could be like a pivotal piece in the history of the conversation around merchant adoption, because it really reframed it in a way that is applicable, where it's not like, go get every merchant to accept Bitcoin. Go get the Bitcoiners who run businesses to accept Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, and one at a time. Mm-hmm. You don't have to turn it on for every Square point of sale system at a moment and expect everybody to accept Bitcoin. Yeah. What you really need is this base of hardened hodlers to eat their own dog food in a certain way. If they're offering businesses and services to individuals, just to have the option out there. Like, I accept Bitcoin. Not only that, I prefer Bitcoin. I'll give you a discount for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, like, one of the great examples was the tweet you put out there recently about like the healthcare provider here in Austin. Like, that was just like a really based move. It was like, you know, I see the benefit of it. I think, you know, doing stuff like that, where you can reach individual merchants, like one at a time, who really understand what it is that they're doing and why they're making this decision. I mean, again, as Parker put it, it's a balance sheet decision, right? At the end of the day, you recognize the superior money, you recognize the benefits of it. And if you can do that, you know, for specific merchants, the Bitcoin hodlers will then come and spend. And that's one of the things that, like, I kind of, like, I've been banging this drum for a while now, that, like, you know, hodling is great. At least it has been for, like, you know, a decade or more to get this store of value going and get us to where we are. But, like, you have to spend Bitcoin. Like, you have to actually use it in the economy and spend it, whether you're spending and replacing or whatever it is you're doing. You have to actually start using it. And I know people will say, like, well, hodling is using it, is, but it's not using it fully. You have to use every aspect of it. And some people might say, oh, well, that will come in time. You have to give, like, the store of value more time, and then things will go through natural evolution and then medium exchange and all. And it's like, well, at what point do you just sit around waiting? Like, what is the point where it's like, everybody's like, oh, okay, now it's a medium exchange? That doesn't happen unless you actually get merchants accepting it, and you get you get people, like, spending it. And like you said, that doesn't necessarily need to be like, oh, we need this on, like, you know, a million terminals, like, in a city or something. It just needs to be like, all right, one merchant. Okay, now we have a healthcare provider. Now we go get a lawyer. Now we get a plumber. Now we get, like, the local rancher. All of these little things that all of a sudden we now have these outlets to spend our Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it all starts with the merchant.
Yeah. I mean, healthcare is one of them. one of the most high leverage important things. And
oh yeah,
when Veronica sent that message out, we were stoked, and then I was even more stoked when I found out she was using Zaprite. And so we received our first invoice earlier this week, on Monday this week, paid it, and was seamless.
Nice.
She's happy, we're happy.
Excellent. Yeah. It's amazing. And reading her like short, I don't think it was a blog post. I think she just put a page up on her website. It's like, this is why I'm accepting Bitcoin. And you know, obviously it ties in a lot to healthcare, like you just said. It's like, you know, healthcare is one of the low prime time preference things in your life. Like, you've got to look after your health or you won't have your future. And the way she explained why it was that, like, you know, her ethos and thinking behind how she runs and her healthcare service and provides her healthcare services is, it matches up and aligns exactly with Bitcoin. You know, she's all about, like, you know, self-sovereignty and providing you with exactly the information that you need to make the best health decisions you can make. And then obviously, like, recognizing the fact that people are allowed to make the best financial decisions they can make, i.e. using the best money. And so one thing she can do to help that is, like, okay, well, I'm going to accept that money. And that's just the clearest indicator you can get that she's really thought about this and understands exactly why she needs to do this and why it's important for her business to do this. And I think we just need more of that. We just need more people recognizing the real reason behind it. Not just the, like, oh, okay, like, I see all these fanatical Bitcoiners and maybe I'll get one or two more customers if I do this. It's like, no, like, you need to understand exactly why you're making this decision as a merchant. And once you do, like, there's no going back, right? Like, it's just going to be obvious that this was the right decision that you needed to make.
Yeah. One at a time.
Yeah.
Emergent grassroots efforts. It's not pretty.
Yeah.
It's not fun at times, but if this is going to be successful and we're going to have the circular economy that Bitcoiners like to talk about, this is how it has to happen. One man at a time, one woman at a time.
Yeah.
One healthcare provider, one rancher.
One nation. Like, this is it. It's like, oh, El Salvador is accepting Bitcoin. It's legal tender. Like, okay, great. And everybody's just sitting there going, who's going to be the next? Who's going to be the next? Like, you know, it's one at a time. We're just doing it on a smaller community level. Like, that's how it happens. You know, we're not going to all sit around and, oh, when is, like, you know, when is Square going to integrate, like, you know, Bitcoin payments into their terminal? Or, like, when is this going to happen? It's like, well, we have the tools. Like, just go to the merchant and go, yep, here's Zaprite, here's Ibex, here's, like, whatever it is, like, you want to use. Like, we have the tools to do it. Like, do it now. Stop waiting for these other bigger companies to come with, like, more streamlined, like, you know, nice, like, you know, oh, well, they have these, like, beautiful little terminals in the shop and stuff. And it's like, oh, we can solve that without that. We already have the tools to fix all that stuff. So, yeah.
If not you, then who?
Yeah, yeah.
It's exciting. And it's exciting, as, like, going back to, like, building in the bear market, but this adoption in the bear market is a very high signal event, too. Yes, it's one healthcare provider.
Yeah.
Yes, Matt, her husband is Tucker Max, and he gets Bitcoin. But
yeah,
that's a funny thing. I'm not sure if you saw Rabbit Hole Recap a couple of weeks ago, but
I did. I was laughing listening to that segment. It was like,
I was disgusted.
You almost fell off your chair. It was
how else do you expect this to happen, Matt?
Yeah,
it's Bitcoin.
I'm glad you pushed back on that, because that was one thing where as well I was like, Matt, what the hell? Like, holy smokes, dude! Like, this, like, you know. Like, be happy. This is good. Like, you know, you can't just go, oh, well, that was a Bitcoiner, so it doesn't matter. It's like,
yeah, well, that's the whole thing. It's like, who do you expect to start this? I mean, going back to this whole conversation we've been having for the last 5 minutes, it's like, you can't sit around and wait for other people to adopt Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoiners have to implement it and lead by example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That was good. That was a good conversation that you guys had.
I'm still disgusted. We'll discuss this next week in person. But in terms of, I mean, it's been what, over a year since we last talked?
Yeah. It was a year and a half. I think it was like around Paddy's Day. It was like March last year.
Yeah. And you mentioned Zaprite's brought on Parker and Will to the team, which has been massive. And the product's obviously evolved a lot over the last 18 months. So what have been the biggest, like, pain points and additions to the product?
So what have we done since last March? Right. So last March, I wasn't too long in Austin. at that point. And I'd started to like raise a bit of money. 1031, the first check-in, which was like amazing. And then a little bit more, and then the bear market like just quickly hit in the middle of last year, and it was like, okay, well, you know, there doesn't seem to be as much money going around, so maybe like I have a good lot here, I'll just go and build and do the things that I want to do. And so one of the first things I did, which was around August last year we started, was I had written the original version of Zaprite, the MVP, in React. And, you know, people tell me I'm a developer, but I don't really think I am. Like, the code was absolute garbage. So we'd hired a developer to come in and kind of fix some stuff. And he was just like, no, we got to rewrite this from scratch. And I was like, yeah, okay, great. Like, let's go. So that was like a very long process. That took like, you know, over 6 months to really get it like, you know, done and dusted. And then we pushed that live in April of this year. And that was like a complete rewrite from the ground up. We moved away from Google Firebase. We have our own Postgres now. We did a lot of things like separating the checkout away from the invoice. So now we have a separate standalone checkout that the invoice feeds into. And that allowed us to do the things like payment links, which we announced at BitBlock Boom and stuff like that, which we can get into as well, the specifics of that if we need to. But there was a lot of work, like a lot of bear market, just like grinding from like basically August right through till April this year when we pushed that through. And that's really like the kind of foundation of everything we're building on right now, is like that complete rewrite of the code base. We have an amazing developer, Tom, who's like leading all of that and is still working like hardcore on that right now. So that was really great, and that allowed us then obviously to kind of like start accelerating roadmap items and you know, everything else that we had that we wanted to like get in there. That was a really great foundation. And it was around that time in you know, April, May of this year when kind of started, you know, having conversations with Parker and Will, because I think they had kind of stepped back from their full-time roles at Unchained in like maybe like just the end of the year before, like in November, I think it was, I can't remember, but they were kind of looking for something to do as well. And they were looking for something in the payment space, and they had very, very, very similar mindset on what needed to be built and done in the payment space. And they kind of like just kind of realized that like, all right, well, John's got like a hell of a lot of this already done with Zaprite, so like, let's just go and talk to him. So it kind of made sense for them to kind of like join in and then just like accelerate the next step of Zaprite. So yeah, I mean, having those two guys on board is like, I mean, man, I'm like completely humbled. Like, I mean, if you asked me like when I kind of like ran out of Canada in September 2021, if I'd be in this position right now with like, you know, Parker Lewis and Wilco coming in to join Zaprite, I'd be like, you know, you're crazy. But here I am, and it's happening, and it's absolutely amazing, because I think it's exactly what Zaprite needed at that point. You know, we were at that point where we kind of like, all right, we've kind of proved there's a bit of a use case there. Still maybe searching for exact product market fit, but like there's definitely use cases, a growing user base. As we just talked about, the payment space and the application space like needs to be built like more. And these guys had like a very firm vision of where that needed to, like what direction it needed to go, and it lined up exactly with what I was thinking. So it was kind of the timing and everything as well was great. It was just like, okay, we've done this massive rewrite. We have this solid code base. We have this like loose roadmap that we need to kind of like focus where we're going next, and having somebody like Will to kind of step in with his background and say like, all right, well, you know, this is where I think we need to go. And then having Parker come in with his business development background as well and going like, okay, well, I know how we're going to like get users, and I know how we're going to like, you know, push that path forward. So that's really been like a huge catalyst for Zaprite and a motivational aspect for me in particular as well, just to be like, okay, like this is kind of like, you know, a little bit of validation. Like I know I've got something that I'm going in the right direction, and having these two guys like on board to say like, yeah, we want to kind of help you with the next step has been huge. So obviously, like, you know, we announced that the announcement of those guys in joining in end of August, like at around BitBlock Boom, and then announced our like our payment links feature and our subscriptions features and stuff like that as well. So that's all kind of rolled out now as well. So now I think we're in again, like I said, we're in a really great spot now where we can actually start like cracking out on all of those roadmap stuff that, that we have for the next kind of like year or two.
So what are the lowest hanging fruits on the roadmap right now?
I mean, there's a bunch of stuff like the plugin stuff is obviously like, you know, that's always ongoing. We're always talking with like, you know, other Bitcoin partners, like wallets, exchanges and stuff like that, and going, okay, how can we plug you guys in, and how can we get like your users, you know, being able to like plug your wallets and everything seamlessly into Zaprite and help like users on both sides of that. So we're always looking at adding more plugins in, even on the self-custody side as well. Like just we're, you know, Lightning addresses, getting Lightning addresses in there and being able to hook them up to people's like LND instances so they get self-custody Lightning addresses, things like that. All of the plugins and connection stuff is like huge. And then there's all like smaller little features that we can enhance the invoicing and the payment links as well. Because obviously the invoicing was, you know, they're one-off payments. You send them out, they get paid once and they're done. So the payment links feature actually allows you to create a hosted payment link that can just be purchased multiple times, right? So if you sell a book or a t-shirt or whatever it might be. So we gave that out to like Jimmy Song at Bitblock Boom, and he was kind of like the first to use it in the wild, like live. He was selling his new book, Fiat Runes Everything, at Bitblock Boom. And so that went like really well. He was, you know, very impressed with it, and everything kind of like, you know, worked as expected. And it was great, like, you know, to see that all, you know, working exactly as we hoped it would. And so there's a bunch of stuff we can add in there as well, like, you know, adding variations on products and multiple quantities and like all that kind of stuff. So there's just like, you know, small little features we can add to that too. And then obviously one of the big things that we really want to focus on as well is the accounting and reporting side of things, right? Because as I mentioned before, that's been one of the things that people always talk about as being one of the drawbacks and one of the feature requests as well that people like really, really want. So that's, you know, that's where we can actually shine and start showing people exactly how their business is performing on a Bitcoin standard. And that's something that, like, you know, we can hopefully get a lot more of those features like built in there in the future, not just our own kind of dashboards and reporting for within Zaprite itself, but also hooking into like QuickBooks and Sage and Xero and all these things as well. I think will be like huge for people.
Yeah, we were talking about this the other day in the commons, like for TFTC, RHR, like being able to hook into QuickBooks.
Yeah,
would be massive, because right now I have my bookkeeper who gets Bitcoin but really doesn't understand it, and then I need my Bitcoin accountant. Shout out to Joe at Satoshi Pacchioli.
Joe's awesome.
To sort of help manage the Bitcoin revenue side of the thing, and then cross compute it with QuickBooks. Mm-hmm. That my bookkeeper's managing. And that's just like a clunky process, where Zaprite QuickBooks integration, just being able to do invoices that can be paid in fiat or Bitcoin via Zaprite, hooked right into QuickBooks, would just be like, holy crap, this is...
Yeah, that would be a nice seamless integration for sure. And that's exactly where we'll head. Right now, we've got like a really comprehensive CSV export, which, like, to be honest, like most users are just like, you know, just give me a CSV, like I'm good, I can deal with that, I can give it to my accountant. So we've kind of like tweaked that and revamped that and added in like a lot more stuff into that, so we actually can give users exactly what they need right now. So that kind of solves the first immediate like need to be able to give everybody exactly what they need for their accounting. And then we can, like I said, just go and make that a hell of a lot easier by doing direct integrations with QuickBooks and things like that. Because like you said, having that ability to have everything just sync immediately into QuickBooks is ideal, because the beauty of Zaprite is you've got this one unified checkout where you can, you know, your users can pay in like on chain or Lightning or card, and it all just goes into the one accounting software, rather than what I think a lot of Bitcoiners seem to be doing now is like, oh well, if you want to pay me in Bitcoin, like here's a link to like, you know, this place over here, and if you want to pay me a credit card, like here's a link over to my like Stripe hosted checkout or whatever it might be. So even just the ability to pull all that into one checkout, like hosted branded checkout, where you don't have to run a server and you don't have to do any of that stuff. You literally just connect your XPub or your LND node or whatever it is. Or even if you want to just do custodial Lightning with Strike or something like that as well, it just makes it super simple. It's like, you know, a couple of clicks and you're immediately accepting Bitcoin in a unified hosted branded checkout that you're not running any of the server infrastructure for.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. It's the funny thing is that going back to like what needs to be built, many people would view this as boring, but somebody running a business, it is boring to a certain extent, but it's extremely important.
And like, it solves an absolute need. I mean, I was scratching my own itch when I was building it. Like, I was freelancing and needed to invoice, and I couldn't do it. There was no proper invoicing software that allowed me to do what I needed to do in a self-custodial manner. And so when you're building something for yourself, you're obviously starting from a good place. So there's obviously a massive need for it. And as we know now, like, you know, a couple of years down the Zaprite journey, there's obviously a whole bunch of people who felt that exact same pain point and were like, yeah, like, holy crap, okay, great, like, this is exactly what I needed. And so, you know, that's really what's kind of driving Zaprite, as I mentioned before, is like just making it so easy for people to accept Bitcoin. And so because we're wallet agnostic and because we're not a payment processor, we don't touch the money. It's like 0% transaction fees. You're completely in control of your own money, whether you want to connect like a self-custodial wallet or you want to hook up to like, you know, like I said, Strike or anybody else, or like Ibex, who's like, you know, like kind of like a step in there as well. If you want somebody to manage the liquidity for you, you can do that. You can hook up a Voltage node through LND or whatever it might be. You really kind of have the full gamut of options. And just giving people those choices means it's just going to get easier and easier for people to come to Zaprite and find exactly what they need.
Yeah. And Parker and I talked about this a lot when he was talking about his payments idea before officially joining Zaprite, and then just like this middleware software that just connects everything, like this connective tissue that anybody can plug into. Again, most people would see it as boring, but it's extremely important if we want to take this industry to the next level, because everybody has their favorite wallet, their preference on-chain versus Lightning, their LSP providers, whatever it may be. And it's just creating a tool that any one of those user archetypes can plug into to accept Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. And even just the ability to like switch between them as well. Like with Zaprite, you can customize each individual checkout for each payment link and each invoice. Like you can switch on and off whatever it is you want to have. So you might have, you know, you might have an LND running on like an Umbral or Start 9 or something like that, where you don't have a huge amount of liquidity, but like it's enough for what you want to do. So you're going to switch that on for one specific thing that you want to do. But then you're like, oh, well, I need to accept, like, you know, I want to sell tickets for like an event, so I need much more liquidity, or I need to take a larger payment, so I'm going to switch on my Strike for this checkout or whatever it might be. And that's the beauty of it. Like you can actually switch LSPs and switch whatever it is you want to do. You can customize that invoice, not just for your preferred payment methods, but for each individual client. You can be like, well, I have a client that I know is going to pay me in Bitcoin, so I'm going to switch off the credit card option. I'm not even going to give them that option. Or maybe you have a customer that pays in credit card, but you've been trying to orange pill them, and so you want to get this in front of them. So you give them that unified Zaprite checkout, which shows them the Bitcoin, the on-chain or Lightning payments. And then you can actually add, like, maybe you want to add like a 10% premium on the credit card option. So now they see that and they're like, oh, damn, okay, maybe I need to go get myself some Bitcoin because I'm going to save 10% on these fees because they're charging me for paying in dirty fiat.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. Let's dive into that more, that incentive mechanism to get people to spend Bitcoin, like with that premium or discount, like how you frame it. Like, because Parker and I talk about this a lot, and he's dead set on like, no, you frame the credit card as you're paying a premium as opposed to like getting a discount for Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. And that was his talk at BitBlock Boom as well. Like at the end of it, I think he kind of touched on it a couple of times in the talk, but at the end of it, I think somebody, probably Simon, asked him a question. And he's like, well, no, you have to actually frame it as the premium on the bad money. Like that's what you need to frame it as. You know, why should you give a discount just for accepting Bitcoin? And I mean, you know, either option is valid, right? Like, right, if you think that the only way you can get a customer to pay you in Bitcoin is by offering maybe like a slight discount on the Bitcoin payment, then, you know, maybe that's what you have to do. But, you know, long term, the proper way to do it is say like, look, I don't want this dirty fiat because I'm going to have to take it in and I'm going to have to bring it to like Unchained and exchange it for Bitcoin and put it in my like custody in Unchained, because like that's what we do as a Bitcoin company. So I'm going to have to go through that process. So I'm going to charge you a premium for that. And so that's kind of the way that, you know, you should be looking at it like long term. But obviously, like, you know, each individual business and user is going to have a different way of looking at it. But yeah, how you frame it is important. And, you know, framing it as dirty fiat is, you know, premium on the dirty fiat is a good way to do it.
Could we customize the fiat line item? Like if you pay in fiat, you're paying a dirty fiat. Like really, really drive the framing home.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to add that feature in, like customize the text in the button. Yeah, do not click this.
Man, it's the payment links too, because I used the payment link to pay Veronica earlier this week, and it was simple. It took me 30 seconds from receiving the message, hitting the link, paying the link, and boom.
Yeah.
Healthcare costs covered for a month.
Covered, yeah. And you get your nice little receipt and your PDF and everything and your email telling you exactly what you paid and your cost basis and everything. And then she gets the same on her side and everybody's happy. Yeah.
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 And that drives home another interesting aspect too of Bitcoin, particularly since it's a push system, like this whole idea of subscriptions and creating this new user flow of, instead of setting up my debit card or my bank account and having it pulled at the first of the month, like I have been historically with ultra personal healthcare. Mm-hmm. Now it's this like new user flow of like, all right, here's a payment link. And again, if you're like on top of it, it's not really that much of a difference. Yes, you have to think about it and take some action, clicking the link, paying the invoice, but is that a hurdle, a UX hurdle you think could create barriers?
I don't see it as a hurdle. It's definitely not ideal. It's definitely not what people are used to, like, you know, putting in their credit card to Stripe and just being auto paid it like every month. It's definitely different, but you know, it's not a massive hurdle. I think, you know, the way we've built the subscriptions, our own subscriptions, because we just launched our subscriptions like $25 a month, or, you know, 20% discount if you pay annually, $240 annually. But the way we're doing that, like, we didn't want to use Stripe or anything like that to manage our subscriptions. Even if we were accepting Bitcoin payments, like, we didn't want to use Stripe software to manage it. So we actually built our own subscription system into Zapride, which will eventually hopefully release out to Zapride users as well, so they can actually start running subscription system as well. But what we're doing initially is we're just using, you know, cronjobs to send emails. It's basically like 7 days beforehand, 3 days beforehand, and on 0 day, like, you'll get emails saying like, you know, hey, reminder, your subscription's coming up and here's a link to a Zapride payment link. And then they go and pay it, boom, we extend their date in Zapride and they get another month or another year or whatever it is they paid. So if we can actually start automating that in some way with like Bolt 12 or with like async payments or whatever it might be that, like, you know, we can do in the future to automate that and take out some of those like pain points. Yeah, absolutely. Like, we're going to do that. We're like chomping at the bit to be able to do some of that stuff. But for now, yeah, it's just like, it's a little bit automated. There's one or two manual steps, but again, I wouldn't describe it as like a hurdle. I think it's just, you know, and people are kind of, you know, if they want to pay in Bitcoin, they're happy to pay in Bitcoin as well, right? So they don't mind it. It's like, it's just an experience that, like, okay, well, maybe I have to click this link every month to like pay every month. But it's just a kind of reminder that, like, well, yeah, this is because it's self-sovereign money. I get to decide when I pay, right? Yeah. I'm not auto-charged all the time.
No, and then on top of that, I think you mentioned it, like, user tendency with the incumbent fiat system is like, all right, I put my bank account or credit card information, it just pulls. But I think the first time that somebody forgets to pay the invoice and then they go to send a Zapride invoice and they can't because they haven't paid their subscription fee, they're just going to be, oh, reminder, like, oh, I have to pay, top up. It's like, it's not like they're going to stop using Zapride. They need to send invoices.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, what we do is if they haven't paid an invoice, they've forgotten. Like, I mean, you know, realistically, if somebody's just using it for invoicing, they may not be sending invoices every single day. It might be once a week, or maybe at the end of the month, they log in and do it all. Maybe they forgot to pay, you know, when their subscription was due. So when they log in, they'll just see, like, you know, a little message that says, like, you know, they'll try and create a new invoice and it'll be like, hey, you need to pay your subscription. You forgot to pay last time. Before you can create a new invoice, you need to pay. And it'll take them to the payment page and they can pay. So, you know, we downgrade them to a read-only access, so they still have access to all of their data. They can download their CSVs, they can, you know, look at everything, download their invoice PDFs. Any invoices that they have sent out can still be paid. Like, we're not going to shut that off. Like, if you don't pay, like, we'll still, any open invoices we'll just allow be paid and come into your expo or your wallet or whatever it is, but you just won't be able to create any new ones and you won't be able to create any payment links. And we'll shut down, you're like, we'll disable your payment links temporarily until you've paid, but your invoices will still, like, if you sent out invoices, you can still get them paid and stuff.
Yeah, I don't see this as being a big hurdle to adoption, because again, if the service is useful, which Zapride certainly is, people I'm like, all right, shit, yeah. I got to pay this $25 invoice to receive $1,000 that I'm going to send out to in receivables.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, obviously, that's one thing that we have to kind of think about as well, is that how we actually charge and how we do that and, you know, what, like, how much per month we charge and what's a good rate to charge. And, you know, there have been some people who've, you know, been like, well, it's kind of high. I don't have that many Bitcoin invoices. And, you know, we get that. And you know, this is an evolving thing as well. Like, we'll start looking at tiers and how we can accommodate more users and different things. But, you know, we had to start somewhere. And because we built the subscription service ourselves, we just kind of started with one simple $25 subscription because we just needed to make sure that it worked and everything was like easy. But as we build out that internal subscription offering, we can start to add more features to it where we can have more plans and tiers and different things, and then we can release it to the public. But yeah, I mean, we definitely opted for the value for value model, right? We're 0% transaction fees because, one, because we're non-custodial, right? And we don't touch the money. So we can't actually, like, you know, take in 100%, take 1% and give you 99%. Like, we just can't do that because we don't ever have access to your money. But two, because I don't necessarily like that model. Like, I personally don't like that percentage on the volume model. If it can be avoided, I think it should be. Some places, you know, maybe for an exchange, it makes sense because it's just, you know, it's easier way to do it. But I much prefer the value for value model where it's like, hey, look, we've built this software. If you get value from it, please pay us $25 a month and you can continue to access it. If you don't see value in it, then you're not going to pay. Like, that's okay. We got to do a better job in convincing you that there is value in it. But I personally think that's a much better model than taking a percentage on volume that goes through. I think we got to prove to our users that there is value in paying that money. And if we're obviously not doing that and they're not paying, then we got to like look at why that is. But it can't just be a simple thing of like, oh, well, it's free to use and like we'll just take percentage of whatever. So yeah, I mean, it's all of this stuff is kind of, any startup kind of goes through all this stuff as well, how to price and how to do different things. But I think personally as a Bitcoiner, like I just see this as a better way to do it. And like I said, we'll like look at different tiers and offer different offerings for like personal accounts and enterprise accounts and all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good place to start. Mm. What are you most excited about?
I mean, oh man, I'm excited every day just working on Zaprite. Like, I mean, it's just, it's amazing that I get to be in this position being the founder of a Bitcoin company and working on something that I'm extremely passionate about. So like every day I just kind of like, you know, get excited about what has to be done like today, because there's just obviously like a huge long list of things that need to be discussed and planned and designed. And like, I'm still doing all the design work. Still a very small team. But I still do a lot of the design work. There's less and less time to do that because the CEO role starts to take up more and more time of your daily time. So eventually we'll get a designer and stuff, but I still love doing design work. So like, it's great when every now and again, I can like jump in and roll up my sleeves and design some like new UI or new feature that needs to be done. In general, I think I mentioned it before, but I'm just really excited for everything that's happening in Bitcoin right now. Like I said, the amount of building that's been happening in the last like 6 to 12 months has been phenomenal. It's crazy. Like it's amazing to see it. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of that pop up to the surface now, you know, early next year, as we start to, you know, slowly creep out of this bear market. We're going to see the fruits of a lot of people's work come to the forefront. And I think it's going to be amazing. I think we'll see a lot more of these applications that make Bitcoin easier to use. And that's what kind of really excites me as a designer and UI UX guy, is like just all these tools that just make it easier. It's something that I, you know, struggled a long time to figure out where I could actually fit into the Bitcoin ecosystem, because I wasn't like a hardcore developer. I couldn't review PORs and look at like Bitcoin core code and stuff like that. So it took me a long time to actually figure out where I could fit in. And I guess the community itself and Bitcoin needed to mature a little bit so that we did get to the stage where we could start building applications on top of things. And so now we finally have that. And now I think there's space for every profession in Bitcoin now. Like whatever it is you do, like marketer, lawyer, like, you know, social media, like whatever it is, like you can be working for a Bitcoin company now. And that's amazing. Like that's really great to see that there are so many roles that are available. Even in the bear market, there's some people who are laying off, but there's a lot of people who are still hiring as well. So it's great to see the ecosystem being developed to such an extent that it's starting to get more and more mainstream in terms of like the jobs offered and the applications that are being built and everything as well on top of it. It's great to see.
Yeah, I think the building that's happened in this bear market, I've said it on many shows in recent months, is far beyond anything I've experienced in my first 10 years in Bitcoin. And to your point, like the companies that are working to make it easier to use Bitcoin, like Zaprite and other companies on the Lightning Network, and even down the hall, Unchained, what they just launched with their keyless
yep.
enterprise offer, others come into market, and it's just extremely exciting. Taking into consideration everything that's happening in the global macro world, the halving on the horizon, and the fact that the next hype cycle that comes, I truly believe that the industry, I mean, this is a fact two ways. It's mature than it's ever been because it's older than it's ever been, but like the actual like tools that people can leverage, like Bitcoin's going to have a lot more to show off during the next hype cycle, where it's not going to be people going on Coinbase and buying and following the charts. They're going to be able to go on an exchange, send it to a wallet, and then play with it on podcasting 2.0 or accepting Bitcoin as payment for their business and all these other interactions that did not exist during the last cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's key to it is the ability for more people to integrate Bitcoin into their daily lives, whether it's a business or their personal lives. I think it's just getting easier and easier. And it's great. Yeah, I love to see it.
Yeah. Are you happy to be back in Austin?
Yeah, I definitely am. It's good. Yeah, I wasn't sure how I'd feel coming back because I came back in June for a month, and now I'm here again for like, you know, best part of a month, and it's great. There's a special vibe in Austin. It's you know, it's amazing just like, you know, walking back into the commons here and just seeing, you know, seeing everybody just like doing their thing and you know, really creating is amazing. And then we had ABC last night as well, so it's good to be back for these meetups, and we'll have Bit Devs and stuff like a couple of weeks down the line. And it's yeah, it's definitely special. Special place to be, and I love being here.
Yeah.
I'll have to come back full time.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna go into, I feel like we're in similar positions where I feel this vibe in Austin where things are happening is very strong, but I also feel that pull from my family up in the Northeast and like getting back to my roots, and it's like
Yeah, family's huge, and that's kind of what I've gone through in the last while as well. Is I mean, I kinda mentioned it earlier where I had to leave and go back to Ireland while I was waiting on the visa. And obviously I hadn't lived there for 14 years, and just going back and, you know, just meeting new people and hanging around with like family, you know, my parents are there, they're not getting any younger. Being able to spend like months with them is like, it's, you know, it's amazing. You don't realize it, but like it took me a while to get there. I was out for dinner with some friends one night, and they basically just said, like, you know, I was chomping at the bit to get my work visa and get back over to Austin and get going again. And I was kind of getting fed up that it was taking so long, and I was waiting on the US embassy in Dublin, and like, I was just getting frustrated. And my friends kind of just looked at me and said, John, like, your visa will come, forget about it. Just enjoy the time that you're spending with your parents and your family here. Cause like, you know, I've got nieces and nephews and stuff that like, I haven't obviously seen in, you know, a long time. I met like a 3-year-old niece that I hadn't met before when I went back like in November and everything. So it was like, you know, it's great. And then obviously like this, the Bitcoin startup scene that's happening in Ireland as well. Like it kind of like, when I went over there after being there for like, you know, 7, 8, 9 months, it's like you start to feel this pull and this draw, and it's like, oh damn, okay. Like this is a feeling that I haven't had in Ireland for like a long time. And family is a huge, like strong part of that as well. But it feels like I have a kind of family here in Austin as well. And that's like kind of hard. Like, you know, when I had to leave in November, it's like I felt like I'd made such amazing friends and met such amazing people that leaving them, like it was tough. And then you go back and you get that same thing with your family. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh man, I got to leave my family and go back over to Austin. And it's like, I mean, look, I mean, we're talking about like first world problems, right? Like it's, yeah. I am blessed to be able to bounce between these countries. Like I have a Canadian passport. I'm obviously Irish. I have a work visa for the US. Like there's not a lot of people who can say that. So I know the position I am in, but again, like it's, you know, it's decision time.
Yeah.
Decision time.
No, I feel it too. I mean, we make our pilgrimage to the shore every summer. We're there for 2 or 3 months with our families, like literally 3 generations, 1 house, 10 of us. Mm. And then my cousins, my extended family's on the island. My kids are hanging out with my cousin's kids, my mom, my brother and sister.
Then we come
back here and it's like, oh God, we missed that. But then we're in the commons and the vibes are high. People are working. Yeah. And there's all this energy here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just this weird thing. Like going back to what we were saying earlier, it's like, I don't know, I toil with it internally too. Like Parker sold me pretty hard. You got to fall back to Austin, build Bitcoin, and then go back to where you came from and sort of build it up there.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe it's just like, you know, bouncing between the two.
Yeah.
Right? You can have the best of both worlds. And then that's kind of where I am right now. It's like I'm kind of looking at this idea of like, okay, maybe do I put some roots down in Ireland and then just like keep traveling over to the US for like, you know, a month or two at a time and doing some work in Austin and then going back to Ireland hanging out. Like, I mean, it's a valid option. But at the same time, like the older you get, like you kind of
get tired.
You get tired of traveling. Like, man, it's just like those 8 or 9 hour flights like over the Atlantic are killer. Like it's,
I don't even like traveling to Bitcoin conferences in the United States.
Yeah, I like, kind of, it's...
People are like, how come you aren't going to this conference? There's just too many goddamn conferences, number one. Number two,
yeah,
like I don't like traveling. I don't like sleeping in hotels. I don't like any of that.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting, I mean, it seems weird to say I'm kind of getting jaded of conferences because I haven't been to too many, but it took me a long time to go to my first Bitcoin conference. Like I've been in Bitcoin since like, you know, 2013, and it was 2022 Miami was my first Bitcoin conference. And I kind of got disillusioned with that because that was like a little bit shitcoinery and like there was too many people there. And I was like, oh, okay, like, and I've been recently been to Baltic Honey Badger. That was amazing. Like Riga's great. That's a great conference, like a lot smaller, more intimate, like amazing people. Like, and that was good. And it was, you know, it was a lot closer to Ireland and stuff as well. So I was able to go. But I am getting to the stage where I'm just like, I don't know, like these just going away for like 3 or 4 days, these conferences, like it's exhausting. Like
hanging out with the same people. Like, it's like, we need to go out.
Like, well, yeah, this is one of the things as well, I think why I might've been so disillusioned with Miami is that like I was living in Austin at the time and then there was like about 50 of us that just went from Austin to Miami and I just hung around with the same people. And I was just like, what's this all? I just paid thousands of dollars to stay in Miami in this accommodation, like to hang around with the same people. Like, it didn't make any sense. But, you know, it's good to experience a few of them. And then, but yeah, you kind of get like a little bit jaded after a while. It's like,
and it's like, how do all these people get this work done? So you're going to, yeah. Like every conference is like, hey, wait a second.
Yeah. I mean, there, you know, you can, I've heard Matt talk about this as well. It's like, you got to be more selective and you've said it before. You got to pick and choose the ones that you go to and you got to kind of scale back a little bit because, you know, after a while, there's not as much benefit to be had from doing the circuit. Yeah.
No, I definitely have my short list. Baltic Honey Badger being one of them. I had to miss this year for the first time, but
that's. Oh, have you been to them all so far except this year? Yeah.
I think except two. I don't think I went to the first ever.
Nice.
But after that,
yeah.
I've been to 3 or 4. I think there's been 5 or 6.
Yeah. There's been a few.
Yeah.
That was the first one I was at, but yeah, really, really impressed.
Shout out to Max. And,
Yeah.
The rest of the team at Huddle Huddle.
Yeah, they did a great job.
Yeah. It's been awesome. It's great to catch up, man.
Yeah, it is. Thanks for having me on. It's been amazing to be back in Austin and back on the show. So thanks for having me. Yeah.
Oh. You've got the open invite whenever you want to come. We can talk.
Appreciate that.
We can talk immigration policy, yeah. Irish heritage, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever we fancy. We don't have to talk about Bitcoin all the time.
Yeah. Maybe we can get deeper on some other topics. But it's been good. It's been good to be, it's been good to, you know, at least to kind of touch on some of that stuff because I think there's a strong Bitcoin community growing in Ireland right now. And it's great to see like the effort of like Gary and other folks over there who are doing like really, really solid work. And like I said, meeting a couple of founders from like new Irish Bitcoin startups and stuff is really, really promising. So fingers crossed that's, you know, that's going to just keep getting better and better.
No, I mean, that's one of the beauties of RHR, particularly like the shout outs and the boosts that we read, is develop this culture of people like pimping their local meetups. If you're out there and you don't have a meetup, go start one.
Oh yeah, man. I'm like, I'm banging that drum all the time. Like there's, like I say it to everybody who listens to me, every podcast I go on and everything. It's like, you cannot overestimate the benefits of getting together face to face as Bitcoiners and discussing all this stuff. Whether it's a local meetup or a hackathon or like a community event or whatever it might be. If there's no meetup in your area, start one. Like, even if it's just like three guys who go for a beer or three gals or whatever, just start it and get some people together, and like it will grow from there. And I think there's huge opportunities to be had when you start attending these meetings and meeting different people and networking and stuff. It's how Zaprite got to be where it is. It was me moving down from Canada, moving to Austin and going to the like BitDevs and ABC and everything like month after month, hanging out at Pleb Lab and Commons and stuff like that. That's how I got my start. And I just can't overstate it. It's been absolutely amazing. So yeah, highly recommend like meetups, start one for sure.
Yeah. And then going back to what we were talking about earlier, like it's gotta be Bitcoiners driving this adoption at the grassroots level. And you can argue that even before that, like point of going to merchants and getting them to accept Bitcoin or having Bitcoiners accept Bitcoin as merchants themselves, like you need these meetups where people can go learn how to actually do it.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah, like huge amount of knowledge out there that Bitcoiners are willing to share. So yeah, just get in there and learn it, absorb it.
John, it's a pleasure. Should be a fun week next week.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Yeah, it's going to be good to see some amazing folks again. Last year was great. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, I think I might have a beer. It's 4:30 on a Friday. I think this is episode number 4 or 5 we've done this week.
Yeah, you deserve
podcast
it.
Podcast in totality.
Yeah.
Let's go have a beer.
Let's go grab a pint of Guinness.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, peace and love, freaks.